On the Leap of Faith this week, U2's new album Songs of Experience recently went straight to the top of the US Billboard chart. And we're also coming to the end of a year when the band's first number one hit in the States, 30 years ago, went on tour once again, the Joshua Tree album. On tonight's show, we ask the question, is there a Christian influence on the music of U2? The night gave you a song, a light had been turned down. I've been talking with one man who's in search of some answers. The Reverend Steve Stockman of the Fitzroy Presbyterian Church in Belfast is a fan, and he's also written a book, Walk On, The Spiritual Journey of U2. I met Steve in Belfast and was curious how his fascination with U2 began.
I got tokens for my birthday in 1982 and went down into the centre of Belfast and was in a record store and saw October by U2. And October, my birthday's in October, was interested in the title for a start. But somebody had said to me that there was something Christian happened with the band, and I'd come to a Christian faith maybe a year before, so I thought, and I was into my music, so I thought, I'll take a chance on that. Took it back to my college room, and I can literally remember putting the needle down on Gloria and just going, wow. It expressed my faith, a young, exuberant faith, in a way that nothing else had at that moment in time. It was that brilliant merging of my faith and rock music that wasn't subculture rock music in some Christian industry. This was actually happening in the real world, and these guys were becoming popular. As somebody who's a music fan like I am and has a Christian faith like I am, there just is no other band in the world that blend those two things as well as U2. Times the theology of the music has even been more important to me than the music. And would I still be listening to them as a band 40 years on? Who knows, if it wasn't that I want to open every album, dissect every lyric sheet and find out the depth of the spirituality that's going on in the band. But they've really been a companion for me, because as I say, Gloria was in a naive late teens. And then you go into a world where suddenly the reality of the world clashes with the naivety of that faith. And I think you go into Unforgettable Fire, maybe Joshua Tree, and suddenly faith and the world are colliding. The band are growing up, and then they deal with all kinds of issues like the media, television. They deal with commerce and the Pop Mart tour. And so I think they have been a spiritual soundtrack to probably the development of my life. Probably not. I'm not saying that the band are gurus that have shaped that, but they've certainly been companions that, as if the track of their faith and the track of my faith have gone down similar roads. We're similar age, we came to faith at similar times, and therefore we've probably grown up spiritually in similar ways. My hands are tied, the body bruised, she got me with nothing.
Looked at the timeline of U2, have you seen a change in what might be driving them?
I think Bono said at one stage in the 80s we sang about what we believed in, and then the 90s we sang about what we didn't believe in. And that's a really interesting way of looking at those two decades, because in the first 10 years it seems as if it's faith and they're very earnest. And then you go into the 90s, Achtung Baby changes it all. There's TVs all over the place and they're setting up this question to us: what has TV done? What has the media done to our lives? And then what has commerce done to our lives? What are all these things we're buying? He talked about how he went looking for religion and he ended up with style, how he went looking for the spirit and he got himself alcohol. And there's the emptiness, there's the God-shaped hole of the 90s. And then you come into All That You Can't Leave Behind at the start of the next decade, and they're back singing positively again. No matter what album you're looking at, there is either a looking at the light or a looking away from the light that can be very beneficial to all of us.
The heart is a blue, shoots up through the stony ground. There's no room, no space to rent in this town. You're out of luck, and the reason that you had to care, the traffic is stuck. You're not moving anywhere. You thought you found a friend to take you out of this place. Someone you could lend a hand in return for grace. It's a beautiful day.
When you look at the band themselves, have you ever actually had direct conversations or access to them? Or has all of this insight come from a distance?
It's all come from a distance. I have met Bono on a couple of occasions, but they've been minimal moments. They haven't been in anything. He wouldn't remember those moments, I imagine. And when I came to write the book Walk On, I started by thinking, right, I need access to the band. However, the longer it went, the more I thought, no, I don't, because I want to say to the U2 fans or the music world or whoever would read the book, I got this without them explaining it, because it's so patently obvious in the music.
So the direct question is, are they a Christian band?
Well, a Christian band is a very different thing than a bunch of people who have a Christian faith, and the Christian faith defines or inspires or directs what they do. So I wouldn't call U2 a Christian band, but I would say that the Christian influence that's there in the individuals definitely shapes what they do. I was asked once, they had won a number of Grammys one time, and I was dragged into a newsroom. And the guy said, I think knowing I was the Reverend Steve Stockman, said, well, Steve, sex and drugs and rock and roll, can you explain the U2 phenomenon? And I said, yes, I think they were more interested in the rock and roll than the sex and drugs. And that's why they're still writing new songs and doing new things 40 years later. I do think that their faith has kept them together. I do think that their faith has shaped their view of the world. I think, therefore, their faith has shaped not only the songs that they write, but also what they do on a stage, because you can't really understand a U2 album until you see how they put it on a stage. Because if you look at songs of Innocence and Experience in the last tour, when you saw how they made the songs blend into each other, suddenly you see the intention in the songs, below the songs, whatever else. And therefore I think that that faith is definitely an anchor in all of that.
You got a face not spoiled by beauty. I have some scars from where I've been. You got eyes that can see right through me. You're not afraid of anything they've seen. I was told that I would feel nothing the first time. I don't know how these cuts heal, but in you I found a rhyme. If there is a light you can always see, and there is a world we can always be. If there is a dark that we shouldn't doubt, and there is a light
All right, so let's explore just a little bit further then the idea that you would listen to a song as a casual listener, and then someone else would listen to it with a theological perspective.
Well, take 360 Croke Park. I'm in the middle of the crowd and Bono's walking around that area. They have all those little stages and bridges that 360 Tour incorporated. And he's standing not very far from me, and it's I think it might have been In the Moment of Surrender, the song. And he's standing there and he's got his arms open and he's looking up to the sky and he's talking about this moment of surrender. Now, if you were at that gig and you had no idea that the Faith Dimension was part of U2, that was a great song. But if you get what he is doing, which in many senses there's connection with a crowd and a connection, I believe, with God and what Bono does at a U2 gig, then that other dimension's incredibly fascinating. And so I think you can listen to them. I think Larry said somewhere, maybe in Time magazine, those who have ears to hear, let them hear. That's how Jesus went about his business of the parables. I'm not saying for one moment that you two are either divine or are even using their music in that way that Jesus used his parables. But I do think there is something about what they do that they're saying, here's the song. We're sending it out there. You might like it as a song. You might like the guitar part. You might like the bass part. You might like the harmonies. But if you listen closely enough and you're interested in this, there's really some spiritual dynamic going on. I think also if you're a band who are always thinking cosmic questions, spiritual questions, the big questions, then you don't run out of ideas for albums or songs. And I think that's the other reason that their new music can be just as vital and crucial as the music they made when they started out, because they're still asking big questions. So therefore, when you have that, you have enough resources to write song after song after song of interest and intrigue. Because I think if you steep yourself in U2 music, the fascinating thing about that is there's quote after quote after quote, not only in the music, but in some of the stuff that Bono talks about. So I have a phrase I use endlessly in sermons called an interruption of grace. I love that idea that grace is a theological concept, is what God wants to do unmerited in the world, interrupts. And I got that from Bono. And there's songs you can use in worship, and there's songs you can use for meditative reflection. It's all there if you spot it, and then it's a great way to open up a congregation to music, art, and faith. I was thinking there, October, it's this very gentle psalm-like meditative thing on that album of the same name, and it's almost like a psalm. Kingdoms rise and kingdoms fall, but you go on and on.
Let's take the song, I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For. How is that perceived when you apply your principles to it?
Well, even I, it's historic now because 30 years ago this year, Joshua Tree came out. It came out at midnight in Belfast and some of us went down there and the band turned up. And I remember doing what I have done almost liturgically ever since. I give a U2 album an absolute listen through without anybody speaking, without just right through. And when Joshua Tree was on and I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For, come on, I went, uh-oh. Is this some sign that they've lost that exuberant faith of October? And then, so what I do is I listen again. A friend of mine always says, when you hear a U2 album, you think, oh my goodness, they've lost their faith. And then after 3 months listening to it, you say, oh my goodness, I wish I had the faith that they have. Because you do need that time to reflect on it. And I still haven't found what I'm looking for. Right in the middle, where that you broke the bonds, loosed the chains, carried the cross, and my shame, you know I believe it, but I still haven't found what I'm looking for. If you look at that in the context of Philippians chapter 3, Paul says that he's found this faith in Christ. But then he says, not that I've already attained it, I press on to the prize to which Christ calls me heavenward. So there's this, I've got this faith, but as I look at the world around me, the world around me is not as it should be. The life I'm living is not as it should be. So I believe in this cross. I believe in what Christ did for me, but I need to press on towards other things. And that was number one on the US charts for 4 weeks. And then, of course, when they did it in Rattlin' Hum, they did it with a New York gospel choir, and that brought the spirituality out of it even more. So I think that is one of their earliest hymns. Daniel Lanois, who was the producer at the time, said to Bono, go and write a spiritual. And if you're going to write a spiritual in a contemporary way in the middle of the 80s, that's as good as you're going to get, I think.
I am glad.
What about if it's not true? What about if you two are making great songs and you guys are paying way more attention to it than they intend?
Well, that was the fear when I wrote the book. The fear when I wrote the book was, am I making this up? Am I contriving it? Am I looking too much into it? And I had a real confidence that I wasn't, probably because I watched all the concerts to see how they were using it. I remember right down to the minutiae of being at the Zoo TV tour, and Bono, we're talking early 90s, and Achtung Babies come out, and if I still haven't found what I'm looking for was stretching the Christian listener, then Achtung Baby was really stretching it. And I remember being in Earl's Court, and I'm up in the gallery and watching this meticulously, and when he got to I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For, and he comes to those lines, the phrase on the cross, he said, and I still believe it. And I'm going, that word, I still believe it's telling me something that maybe nobody else in the audience heard that night, but because I'm looking for it, I'm hearing it.
We live in a time where people are very often detaching from the faith they may have been born into, and yet they're still wanting to hold on to some kind of faith or spirituality. Say, for example, if one were a Presbyterian or were a Catholic and now decides, okay, well, you know, I'm not sure, but I'm going to go with the faith of you too, what would you be signing up for?
Well, somebody said to me, did I ever think that the church would ever have the kind of pulling power of U2 anymore? And my answer to that was on a radio show. My answer to that was, if you're telling me that U2 are the ones out in the public sphere who have got the attention of the world, then I would be pretty happy with that, because they're coming from the same Christian dynamic that my church is coming from. So I think you can find a lot in the music of U2 that could sustain you, could be pastoral, could be informative, could give you a view of the world. Somebody has said that as a Christian you can write two kinds of songs. You can write songs about the light, but you can also write songs of what you see from the light. So they started to look outward, and the first place they looked actually was Belfast, Sunday Bloody Sunday. And in the middle of this song about the Troubles, so we're talking about 1983, the Troubles were, you know, it was pretty bad in the early 80s in Belfast. And in the middle of that, you have them looking at the victory that Jesus won. So right into the middle of this song, which is it's pretty realistic about bottles under children's feet and all this other stuff, the hopefulness that Jesus, that they believed in, might have some input into that is quite interesting, especially if you're from Northern Ireland, like I'm from. And then within a couple of years, they've come across Martin Luther King, and I think that really is a chance for them to embed the spirituality inwardly with how it can connect socially and politically. And song like Pride in the Name of Love, which in some ways is a bridge from the early U2, because the first few lines could be seen as anything off October, but then later on, early morning April 4, shot rings out, and you're realising that you're outside of a personal thing here, and you're looking at Martin Luther King and the impact that Martin Luther King, I think, had not only in their lives, and that they could make a change in the world through their faith, but also in how they could relate their faith to wider issues. So those kinds of songs, when you hear them live in a concert, can be incredibly inspirational, whether you have a faith or not. When you shout back at a U2 concert, there's no doubt that U2 are trying in their way to make that an event, which a bit like what a church event should be like, where your soul and your heart gets wound up in this possibility of change, this possibility that you can influence the world, this possibility of the belief in humanity as well as in a belief in the redemption that comes from God. They have this intention, whether they're looking at issues of AIDS, which they did for a while, whether they're looking at the last album, they were looking at the refugee crisis, all these things that come into a U2 album and even more into a live set. They've got a crowd in their hands, and they're going to try and breathe some hope into this crowd, that this crowd can make an impact in the world around them.
Now, we mentioned earlier that you worked at a distance from Bono and the group. Let's assume you actually get to sit in front of them. What would be the three questions you'd ask them?
I think the first question I would love to ask them is, how have they maintained the spirituality at the core of their lives without a church connection? Because many people struggle when they don't have a church community around them. But it's quite remarkable that they've been able to hold together their faith almost in isolation from church community. Or maybe some people would say that's how they've held it together, because the church is sometimes a bigger stumbling block for faith than not. I really think that would be a question I'd love to ask. I think I'd love to also ask a simple one with a yes answer, which is how much has Ali Hewson been the core of this band? And maybe some of the other wives. I know about Ali more than I do the others, but it seems to me that anybody that's been around them, that Ali Hewson seems to stand out. And I think a biography on the spirituality of Ali Hewson, which will never happen, would be something I would be most fascinated about. And just why they keep doing it, why they keep, in the age they're at, not just going out and doing a greatest hits, but why they want to create the best album ever for the next one, when you have the catalogue that they have. We look patiently for the light.